history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, the stories that are there waiting to be told are definitely worth hearing. And we get to hear them each week as we seek to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we always learn a lot. We're educated, yes, we're entertained, and often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. February, of course, is Black History Month, and we're going to make that the focus of today's episode. We've had the good fortune of meeting quite a few African-American veterans of World War II over the years, and America got to know one of the more than 900,000 African-Americans who served in World War II pretty well over the last week. If you watched Super Bowl 54 long before the Kansas City Chiefs staged their epic comeback, you saw someone else wearing red preside over the pregame coin toss. It was Colonel Charles McGee, a highly decorated member of the 332nd Fighter Group in World War II. He flew 137 combat missions in P-39s, P-47s, and P-51s, escorting American bombers and maintaining the Tuskegee Airmen's perfect record of never losing a bomber that they escorted. After the military was integrated, McGee flew again in the Korean War and the Vietnam War. And just a few days after the Super Bowl, Colonel McGee was honorarily promoted to Brigadier General before being recognized during the State of the Union. The U.S. Air Force released a video of the 100-year-old summarizing what he, the rest of the Tuskegee Airmen, and all 900,000 African-American servicemen in the war had accomplished. You can watch that video at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And you can hear Charles McGee's narration right now.
I'm Charles Edward McGee, Air Force retired, and I was born in Cleveland, Ohio in 1919. Tuskegee Airmen are black pilots, mechanics, and support people who, when our country declared war against Hitler, came forward and dispel the biases and generalizations that because of the color of our skin, we couldn't support our country in a technical area. Our task was to keep the air clear of German fighters that were destroying many of our bombers. You know, we thought we had enough guns on the B-17s and B-24s to protect them. That wasn't so, and that's why the escort work began. We also destroyed a lot of Germany's war-making potential on the ground. The Pittsburgh Courier came out and said, no, this is a double victory activity for black Americans, fighting against Hitler in Europe and also fighting against racism here at home. One thing personally, folks say, well, how'd you face that? I said, well, I grew up learning that, you treat others like you want to be treated. So important. And then realizing that the value lessons that sustained us are just as important for the young people today and what they face for America's future and preserving the freedoms we claim we all so much enjoy. Don't let the circumstances be an excuse for not achieving. We could have very easily, they don't like me, they don't want me, and gone off in the corner with our head bowed. That's not the American way.
100 years old and still inspiring people in America and all over the globe, Brigadier General Charles McGee. And just a few weeks before his memorable moments in Miami and in our nation's capital, another ceremony took place several time zones to the west, when for the first time a U.S. aircraft carrier was named after an African American. Before we hear from a clip from that ceremony at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, let's listen to this explanation from naval historian Dr. Regina Akers about what Dory Miller, a sailor aboard the USS West Virginia, did to deserve that unprecedented honor.
On 7 December 1941, the Japanese had a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. And one of their specific goals was Battleship Roe. Dory Miller was on the USS West Virginia, a battleship. He had just finished serving and he was sorting laundry when the first enemy attack hit his ship, the West Virginia. During that time, everybody on the crew has a battle station. When Dory reports to his, that part of the ship is damaged, so he moves on. He encounters an officer who is with the captain of West Virginia, Captain O'Banion, and he's got a mortar attack, shrapnel attack, rather. He's been hit by shrapnel, and he's injured, seriously injured. And so the officer asks him to move, assist him in moving the captain to a safer deck, which he does. And then he proceeds, when they reach that deck, to respond to the attack. And he and an officer look, there's an ammunition gun there, a 50 caliber anti-aircraft gun, and Miller takes the gun and he shoots. Now what's extraordinary about that is, as a mess attendant, normally his battle station would have been to hand the ammunition up to the gunner, because blacks weren't allowed to be gunners, to fill the gunner's mate rate at that time. But Dory literally took the gun and started shooting. And there's lots of stories. Did he shoot something down? Did he not? We really don't know. No one is credited with a shoot down at Pearl Harbor. He says, had said in several interviews, he thinks he might have hit one or two. And that's why that carries on into our time, that Dory Miller shot down planes at Pearl Harbor. I should add, too, that in addition to that, the ship's severely damaged, can't be saved. One of O'Banion's last thing is to give the abandoned ship order. And so Dory Miller, there are injured people and sailors trying to move about the ship. He assists them, and then once he's in the water, he continues to do that. So his heroism didn't stop with firing a gun, is the point I want to make. It continued throughout the events of that morning, that fateful morning. When Dory Miller entered the Navy in 1939, blacks were limited to specific ratings. And Jim Crowism in society, separation of the races, was also the practice and policy in our military by virtue of our War Department. And so the Navy discriminated against blacks by the types of ratings that they could fill. The idea was that they couldn't do any more than manual labor. The Navy hadn't recruited a black in general service since 1922. So when Miller enters in 39, that's what he's coming into. But he's from Waco, Texas, so racism and discrimination are not far from his experience. It's important to the Navy on a couple of levels. One, Dory Miller is a hero, his heroism, his response, putting the captain to a safer place. Dory Miller's actions, though he didn't wake up that morning and decide to be a hero, contradicted the popular belief that blacks and whites could not serve together effectively and efficiently, that blacks could not perform in combat, that blacks were, some of the stereotypes, that blacks were afraid of water. It contrasted that quite a bit. After this happens, Dory Miller is put in for an award, initially by Secretary of the Navy William Franklin Knox. He decides that Dory Miller should get a letter of commendation. And the president and Chester Nimitz, who succeeded husband Kimmel as a commander-in-chief of the Pacific, disagree. And the president intervenes. Now, keep in mind, Chester Nimitz had just come from what we call today the Bureau of Naval Personnel before he took that job. And so he understood the significance for the Navy, because for the Navy, Dory Miller is going to become a symbol or a means of recruitment to encourage other blacks to enlist. And also keep in mind that just prior to this, earlier in that year, there was a threat for a march on Washington because the war industries were not hiring African Americans. And so A. Philip Randolph, who was the president of the Sleeping Car Porters, proposed a march on Washington to protest this. So Roosevelt has all these things in mind when this happens. Anyway, consequently, they intervene and Dory Miller receives the Navy Cross, which at the time was the third highest award, May 27th of 1942, aboard a ship, Nimitz himself presents it, in Hawaii. And so that's the significance. And also they continue to use him in this way in the sense that he goes on recruitment drives, he goes on war bond drives, his picture's all over the place. So there's that impact for the Navy. If we talk about the African-American community, they didn't learn of Miller's immediate actions or his heroism. And for some, that angered them. When World War II broke out, blacks had second-class status. As I mentioned earlier, this was a segregated country. The branches of the military were segregated by custom, by policy, and by tradition. And so when they learn of Dory Miller, initially he's just described as a Negro sailor. And then later they actually learned his name through a Pittsburgh Courier article. Well, for them, this becomes part of what will become the Double V campaign during World War II that the Pittsburgh Courier initiated. And that was the idea that we can defeat fascism abroad and racism at home during this war. And there was an overall civil rights movement. I spoke earlier of A. Philip Randolph. So he's going to become part of that. This will be a milestone in that because there's a hope. He becomes a symbol of, he's actually in a paradoxical situation because he becomes a celebrity overnight. He has to deal with what that heroism meant in these recruitment drives. The accounts say he was, although he was 6'3 and 220, Dorie Miller was very soft-spoken. You know, not boastful as you would think if you saw pictures of him. So that was a new role for him to play, and it was immediate, right? So for the Navy, he becomes the poster child for this is why African-Americans should join the Navy. But at the same time, he's representing the fact that there are limited opportunities for blacks. For the black community, he becomes a source of race pride, representation of their commitment to the country. And he's also continuing that legacy of African-American service in the military back to the days of George Washington and the American Revolutionary War, and specifically, since we're talking about the Navy, back to the colonial and state navies in that war. So he's continuing that legacy of outstanding service and a willingness to fight for rights which his race was denied here at home. They put coupons in newspapers that advocated, went all over the country, and one advocating that Dorie Miller should be admitted to the Naval Academy. Another advocating that he should be get a commission. Unheard of, right? We hadn't even had black officers at this point in our Navy. They also had rallies. They sent letters and petitions to Congress. Civic, social, and civil rights organizations got involved. As you might imagine, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Some of the sororities, the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority. All these and religious organizations came together to advocate for that because he represented a hope that the segregated society didn't have to be that way, and hope for a society where we could have racial equality. And so that lined up with the civil rights movement, continuous civil rights movement in the country's history. Like I said, here's Dorie Miller, you talk about the weight of the world, kinda, finding himself in the midst of all of this, when all he wants to do is get to his next ship, right? That didn't happen immediately because he had these drives. So he becomes a symbol of hope for the black race, and his image is all over the place, in newspapers and magazines, and was used in recruitment ads and posters even well after World War II. Heroism is not limited to any one race, gender, or any other demographic, for sure. He was the son of tenant sharecroppers, very humble beginnings. Where one starts is no indicator of where they can go in life or where they will end up in life. Dorie Miller did not let people's limited expectations of him limit his view of himself or what he could accomplish as a sailor. And that applies to anyone in any profession who's facing any kind of oppression or people trying to hinder your career. He was focused on what he wanted to do. He didn't take his mind off the prize. The other thing was that in the spring of 42, a CB battalion honored Miller by naming their battalion after him. So there was some really immediate impacts. When people were advocating, even in local elections, they would bring up Dorie Miller's heroism. Wendell Willkie, who was President Roosevelt's opponent in the election, he brought it up. So there's that sort of immediate impact. The Navy will eventually honor Miller in many ways. There'll be facilities named after him, like a barracks. There's a park in Hawaii named in honor of Miller and his family. If you go to just about any museum, you will see Miller celebrated and featured in the World War II section. And that includes our new museum, National Museum of African American History and Heritage, the world famous World War II Museum in New Orleans. I've seen it. And certainly the one at Pearl Harbor. But there are parks, there are schools, and I'm not just talking about Waco, Texas, where he's from. that where he's given, efforts have been given to give him due honor.
And the latest and greatest honor came from Acting Secretary of the Navy Thomas Modley in naming the new aircraft carrier CVN-81 the USS Doris Miller. Not only the first carrier named for an African-American serviceman, but also the first carrier ever named for an enlisted man.
The USS Doris Miller will be our most advanced and lethal warship. More than that, it will be the most advanced and lethal ship the world has ever seen. But beyond her capabilities as a warfighting platform, wherever this ship and her strike group may travel, the USS Doris Miller will also be a reminder of the ongoing journey for justice that has defined our nation, a tribute to our enlisted personnel, and a living, tangible memorial to all those who fought in World War II. Every sailor and Marine who sails on board the USS Doris Miller must honor its namesake's legacy by showing the same initiative, professionalism, and commitment that Messman Miller did under the harshest possible conditions imaginable. And then every one of us here today must honor the dignity and leadership Doris Miller showed as he spoke across the country, igniting a moral fight for justice and catalyzing change that would eventually transform our country and transform it for the better. Wherever and whenever the people of the world will see the USS Doris Miller, they will know what we value, what we stand for, and who we are as a people. And they will remember the extraordinary journey that brought us here, how we have never relented in pursuing justice at home and abroad, and the ongoing work and peace that we must pursue as long as we remain a nation. Doris Miller was the son of a sharecropper, a descendant of slaves. He was not given the same opportunities that men of a different color were given to serve his country. But on December 7th, 1941, he would not be defined by the prejudice of other peoples. He was not just a sailor, he was an American sailor, so designated by the uniform that he wore, the same uniform all American sailors wear and still wear, regardless of race, ethnic background, accent, religion, or political persuasion. He was the greatest of sailors because he was an American sailor. And as an American sailor, in the violence and chaos of that awful December day, it was his character, not his skin color or his uniform, that ordained that he would become something even more than that, that he would become an American hero. And it is for that reason that Doris Miller will sail into history from this point in place forward, adorning the most powerful American warship in the world for the better part of this century. It is an honor that he, his family, and all those who struggle for civil rights within our Navy and our nation duly deserve. May God protect all those who sail on the USS Doris Miller, and may God continue to bless this nation and all of the sailors and Marines who go in harm's way every day to keep us safe and to keep us free.
Again, that was Acting Secretary of the Navy Thomas Modley in excerpts from the ceremony dedicating the newest American aircraft carrier in honor of Pearl Harbor hero Dory Miller, who was later killed in action while serving aboard the USS Liscombe Bay in November 1944. It's time for our first break, but there's more to come on this special edition of Hometown Heroes. Hear from one trailblazer on the diamond and another in the operating room about their World War II experiences. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.